Ready to roll. Today is November 7th, 2022. Baruch Hashem, I got it right. In relation to yesterday's shiur, I just want to mention the book I quoted at the end about Hasidic Britot. I evidently said the name of the publisher too quickly and people did not pick it up. Machon R. Liyisharim. Aleph Vav Resh. Machon R. Liyisharim. One other small comment on the story I told you about the people from Tashkent. The lady married a Bavavach, that I was correct, not a Belzach, I said Belz, because I have an affinity for Belz through my wife, but it was a Bavavach. Okay, yeah, small correction. Once again, I come back to the YouTube, and I thank you very much, Ben, for putting on YouTube, and you can find it very simply if you just type in YouTube, Mendelovitz Rakefet. And endless people have watched it, and it did come out very well. Even my wife is my severest critic, and she said this is mamish on a level that even Reb Moshe Feinstein or the Rav, you know, for us, that's what counts, could sit down and watch it and gain. Okay, now I want to come back here, and I don't know if you'll appreciate the chiddush I'll be saying in the next 15 minutes, but you'll understand. This question of how to relate to conservative reform, it haunts us. And there's no question that in the United States, we have various opinions. I would classify myself on that issue right of center. I think I was more adamant against not recognizing reform conservative than the Rav was. At least back in 56, I felt that way. I would say there's no question that the average YU rabbi is more open than, for the sake of argument, someone from Lakewood or perhaps Ne Yisrael. I don't believe he's more open than Chabad. Chabad is more open than all of us. But we certainly don't totally agree on this issue. And I can tell you, a moment in time in life, there's certain moments you never forget. When the OU was told, I was at the OU convention, I was a guest, I spoke at the OU convention, it had to be 92, 94. It's at that convention they announced that the synagogue council has been abolished. And one of the big shots in the OU, he's no longer alive, headed up NCSY, got up and made a Shechianu. So I turned to the chief rabbi was sitting right next to me, so I turned to Rabbi Lau and I said, that was a bracha levatala, mimanifshach. If you hold the synagogue council is positive and does things, it's a bracha levatala. If you hold it, it's good to get rid of the synagogue council. Abe, it's not a Shechianu, it's Hatova HaMeitiv. It's not just good for you, it's good for everybody. So we both laughed. But you can understand, there was a whole machlekes afterwards. Did he have a right to make that bracha? And oh, what went on? Let's go back to the homeland that gave birth to the Heckscher family. In Germany, until Kristallnacht, the Torah people were divided how to relate to the non-religious or the non-orthodox. As you know, in every big kehila, there was an Alstrit congregation and a Gemeinde congregation. What happened in Hungary was very different. And I call your attention to it because, you know, most people just gloss over it and don't realize the depth of what happened. In Hungary, you had a total division, like I said last week, like I quoted from Saul Pohl's book. And it's one of the books worth reading. If you read this and George Kranzler's work on Williamsburg, you get a very nice picture of Williamsburg in the 40s and the 50s. And Hungary is big. Part of Hungary is near Germany. Part of Hungary is near Poland, Galicia. The ones near Germany, many were clean-shaven. The Frum people, clean-shaven, went to university, had professions. The ones near Galicia, Poland, they were much more Hasidic. Bekishes, Strimals. You had basically two different elements of the Torah community. But you know what's amazing? When it came to the question of how to relate to the Neolog, to the non-Orthodox, they were totally united. They actually totally put them in Cherem. And this was unique to Hungary. And I think the reason was the Chatam Sofer. The Chatam Sofer had an impact that goes on until today. I just saw this morning, Jakob, do me a favor, close the door so we're not interrupted by noise when Torah Shraga comes to life. I just saw today on Yeshiva World News that the Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky issued an issur against an iPad, against a phone, even a phone that's so-called kosher. If he asks it from a chanchim, what does it mean that the student shouldn't get a bad example? You see, my mind, I come back to the joke I told in class, and evidently a lot of chashuva people were listening to me because I have a copyright on it, and when a Hasidic Rebbe uses my mushel, he should have given me credit, but I guess he didn't want to be put in cherem. But you remember what I said? They spent over $1 million in New York, in Queens, took City Stadium, as it called, what used to be Shea Stadium, and a big rally against the computer. And people were forced to pay to go. Yeah, I mean, I know the inside story. To me, this is idiocy. You want a rally? Let's rally against cars. Since cars were invented, millions and millions of people were killed. So you see, to my way of thinking, I'm a Talmud of the Rav, I have to admit it. You can't fight modernization and inventions. The trick is to take it and sanctify it. And Baruch Hashem, I can only tell you with the computer what's available, how many dafyomis, I mean, how much learning is available on the computer. My whole teaching, I have here, we don't have a minion sitting in front of me, all right? We have more on the screen. But ultimately, thousands here this year. I mean, you can't believe the emails I get. And people are listening. It's beyond words, all right? What else is on the computer? There must be pornography, and there must be murder, and there must be cursing. I don't know. If you read a newspaper today, it's also pornography. That's a different problem. I'm talking about, you know, Yidyot, Mariv. I think Yisrael Hayom is a little bit better than the other newspapers. But we have to, you know, conquer the world. The Chatam Sofer, when he took that Mishnah in Allah and took it figuratively, because it's nothing to do with innovation, it has to do with Isa Chadash. Chadash Asam in a Torah Mikol Makom. Chadash Asam in a Torah, anything new. And Hungary felt a tremendous kinship to the Chatam Sofer. It's like going to Lakewood. In Lakewood today, maybe there are 10 people alive who yet learned the Baron Cutler. Right? But you mention Lakewood right away, what comes to mind? The Baron Cutler? The Chatam Sofer was such a personality that it had tremendous impact. And in Hungary, everyone joined against the non-religious. And this reality affects everyone who comes from Hungary. Szatmár could not have come from Lithuania. From Hungary, yes. Munkács could not have come from Lithuania. Hungary, yes. And when you look at the background of Hungary, you start to understand the Szakma a lot better. Now, what's interesting about Hungary, that it's a replay of Germany, that they tried the Franz Joseph, the King Franz Joseph I was actually a philo-Semite. He loved the Jews, he helped the Jews, and he gave them full citizenship, integrated them, and just like Germany, they wanted the ability to deal with only one community, and at first, everyone joined together. The Orthodox, the Neologue, the Orthodox were two groups, as I mentioned, the ones near Germany, more Ashkenazic, the ones near Poland, Galicia, more Hasidic, and they all joined together. And then, at one of the early meetings with all the Jews together, 1869 we're talking about, they introduced laws how this organization is going to work, and the Orthodox insisted they have to put into the code lines in accordance with the halacha. That was voted down, by the way, not by a big plurality, by a small plurality. It was voted down. At that moment, the Orthodox left, and they appealed to Franz Joseph, and the Hungarian parliament, exactly like the Austrian law in Germany, the Hungarian parliament passed a similar law, and from that moment on, the Orthodox stood united. You had purely Orthodox kehilat. They all joined together, recognized by the government. There was no Gemeinde Kehila. You had nothing to do with the Neologue and the Reform. By the way, in Hungary, the Neologue was much bigger than the Reform. In Germany, the Reform was much bigger than the historic school, which we would identify with conservative Judaism today. So this was the background of the Munkacsa, later of the Szakma Rav. Now, when the Szakma Rav comes to America, and, you know, everyone today, it's easy to take history on an elementary level. The Szakma Rav came, he established everything, did everything on his own. The truth of the matter is that one person came before the Szakma Rav. He got out of Europe in 1939. We don't have the exact year of his birth. His name is Reb Levi Yitzchok Grunwald. It's spelled G-I-U-N-W-A-L-D. Grunwald, a famous Hungarian family, many branches. He was Salem Rav. We don't know the exact date of his birth. Here I have from the Kvarim website, which our teachings, we inspired many historians. Kvarim is one of them. Baruch Hamzel, my student. And date of birth between 1862 or until 1912. There's only one problem with it, that Salem died in 1980. So 18th year, you don't have to be a Harvard graduate to deal with 1862 to 1980, it doesn't seem plausible. But he came to America first. And here, I refer you to a volume, the Tzelem Rav, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Grunwald, His Life, Accomplishments, and Legacy by Bezalel Khan, published and distributed by Feldheim. Now, why is the Tzelem Rav so important? He came to America, he settles in Brooklyn. There's Salem today in Borough Park. It could be you have another branch. It never became very, very big in America. But I'll tell you why it's important. It paved the ground for Szakma. What does this mean? I sat in the Rav's class, and you're dealing here with the Rav, you're dealing here with Rav Chaim Brisker's grandson, you're dealing here with a Gaon Shebugoinim. And I don't know how it came up in class, because the Rav was Machshir, a slaughterhouse. And the only time they would interrupt the Rav in class, he gave orders, he's never to be interrupted when he's teaching. The only time they would interrupt him is there was a shaylach from the slaughterhouse. Because when there was a shaylach from the slaughterhouse, you can't keep the cow, you know, you're dealing with the minutes of time. You got to get it into the refrigerator, etc. You got to make a decision, kosher, non-kosher, which way do you go? So a few times he would be interrupted by Mr. Abrams. They'd call him, you know, he'd walk out to the office. There were no cellular phones then. And he would come back. And one time he came back, and I don't know, either we bothered him or he let down his hair, and he started talking about glut. And he got hysterical, glut treif, quote, end quote. And we found out later what the Rav meant, that in his slaughterhouse there was a certain percentage of animals found treif. I think it was, again, I'm going back to the mid-50s, but I think it was like 22%, 23%. And somehow in the glatt kosher slaughterhouses, they didn't have so many treif. And he said, it's impossible. And, he carried on. Who heard of glatt in America? You grew up in America in 1910s, 1920s, 1930s. Both my grandparents on both sides had kosher homes. On one side, there was Shabbat, there was also Shabbat. On the other side, the Shabbat already was infringed upon. But they all had kosher. Who heard glatt? Kosher. Who heard glatt? Milk. When Lakewood began, this you can check out. Yeah, see if your father knows this. In Lakewood, when Lakewood began, we're talking 43, 44. You know what they drank? Breakstones. And Breakstones was owned by Jews. Givarim Yidden, formed Jews. They made available to... I don't know if they charged them. But if they charged them, it was just cost. They didn't make a profit on the yeshiva. And you know, who heard of Hall of Yisrael? Who heard of Hall of Yisrael? By the 1970s, I can tell you a famous story that the people involved told it to me, that my own Talmidim. By the 1970s, look, you grow older. I have to face reality. My legs are gone. My kneecaps are gone. Meniscus. So there's a Talmud Chaver of mine. His father taught with me in YU. He comes to Mincha Maariv in the Shtibel Daven to walk me home, because it's going up steady. I don't know if you know Yiddish slang, but there are no shuls on Berlin. The closest shuls are on Chalap. I climbed the steps up and down morning and night. So he walks me home. By the 70s, the Rav was dependent upon his shamashim. So I heard the story. The two shamashim were both my students. It has to be mid-70s. And as I told you yesterday, the Rav had a problem with ulcers, and he drank a lot of milk. So he says to the shamas, get me a quart of milk. And he gives him a dollar bill, whatever. Get me a quart of milk. And the shamashim, they're looking, what we get? And the Rav says, get me a quart of milk, Delwood milk, with I know you. And you know, who heard of Chalav Yisrael? You understand? It's America. The Tzelem HaRav came, as he was an Ungarisha, and it bothered him that he was the first one in America to set up Glatt Kosher and to set up Chalav Yisrael. The first one. And mind you, he had a sense of humor. He said, I established, when the Satmar came, he greeted the Satmar. He went to the pier, we'll talk about him in a minute. He said, I established Glatt and Chol of Yisrael. But at various people, the Satmar came, we had who to sell it to. We had already people who were interested. But you see, the Tzelema, Kahal Aruga Kabosem, it's named after his father's Sfarim, and they tell stories of him. He was a legendary figure, you know, humble and modest. And one story they tell, that after a heavy blizzard and snowfall, the Rebbe is davening Shachris, and he inquires if anyone could lend them a pair of boots. So they immediately get a pair of boots and say, Rebbe, what's that? What do you need boots for? You know, you're walking ahead, you lived at the shtibble, you live upstairs. What do you... So he says, I have to go out to the farm to check that the mashgichim is there. And you see, that's like the OU. The OU has many levels of kasher. If you're aware of it, let's say certain plans, they'll say you only need a yotzei v'nichnas. Other plans, you need a mashgich tamidi. Then they have someone who goes from the area, from place to place, to check that the mashgichim are there. You don't realize what's involved in kashrut. And the OU brought it to a new level. You don't get paid by who you're giving the hechshah for. The OU pays you. All money goes through the OU. I mean, it's unbelievable what they accomplished. But the Tzelema was the first one. Then wine, what did you have in America? Say you had the Manischewitz wine, Shapiro, but you didn't have a real Ungarische Hasidische wine. This was when Kedem Wine Companies established, the Herzog family. And you know, these were people who were in Hungary, were in the wine business. It's like Barton's Candy, the Klein family. They were Hungarians. And they knew the Candy family. I mean, these people succeeded so, but it all goes back to the Tzelema. Now, here's a very important point. And this was my machloket again. Shalom Gold is a little older than I am, and he lived it all. You know, I can boast that I knew Reb Aaron yet, and etc. He goes back even further. And we had a tremendous argument. This is really true. There's a lady in Yerushalayim. She's a widow. Her husband got smicha with me. And one Yom HaTzmut, maybe, we were all younger, like, 10, 15 years ago. So she made a Yom HaTzmut party in her lawn, in her back lawn. She married into a family that was well-to-do, supporting what became Yeshiva University in the 1920s, okay? And what a family. And she made a party, a widow, we all came. It was all Rabbanim. If you weren't the Rav, you weren't invited. So Shalom Gold and I spoke, and we had a big argument on Satva. He maledicted him, and his point was that it wasn't just Satma. Satma influenced everybody. And the yeshiva that was so pro-Israel in 48 and 49, today, outside of YU, where do you find the yeshiva that flies an Israeli flag on Yom HaTzmut? All right? He blames Satma. I had a different approach. My approach was more positive, that Satma is our biggest reservoir today for Balei Tshuva. We have to make them firm. We have to bring them to real Yiddishkeit. All right, it's a challenge, but we can get there. Believe me, we can get there. Well, it's not for now, but we can get there. Again, you can't, everyone's all excited about the new Knesset. So you heard what I said yesterday, that now we didn't let down the Torah. Now we have to see that the politicians don't let down the Torah. Ben, this is the first time you're really seeing how a government is going to be formed, that basically Netanyahu is fenced in. You follow me? Because he's the biggest faker in the world. He's a politician. By definition, that means compromise, compromise, compromise. So he always was lucky he had left-wingers. So what can I do? Money, you know, I can't, I have to do that. This time he's in real trouble because they're no left-wingers. But we got to be sure that our politicians, you know, have a little seichel and are honest. But the what happened with the Tzelema, with that heksha, today in America, every from Jew, basically, is glatt kosher. They look at you askance. If you're not glatt, a neuswaf, a trampenik, a pushtak, a kaldas. It's amazing. I can go even further. And you know, I've said this and I cry. When Rabbi Stern died, who was giving the heksher on Hebrew National, the Ralbach family that inherited the heksher turned to the OU and asked the OU to take over the heksher. I mean, you got to understand what this would have meant. Hebrew National with an OU, it means you can find hot dogs all over the world, Hebrew National, United States, Canada, and I, you know, I had very close contacts in the OU, the Tzar, Rabbi Holzer was my bosom buddy, and I turned to Manny Holzer and said, Kvod Levrach, I say, Manny, why did you reject them? You know what he answered me? We don't have enough glatt kosher meat available. And could you imagine? I said, so why? You're makpid and glatt? The Rav was makpid and glatt? What are we talking about? He says, it's a different world today. The OU cannot give a hechshir that's not glatt. Plain and simple. It's not just the Sfadim. The Sfadim need Beit Joseph. But we're dealing here, it caught on. Chalav Yisrael, I remember Chalav Yisrael, I went to school, one of my classmates was Balsam, they were Balsam, that was one of the early Chalav Yisrael companies. Half the time the milk was sour by the time you got it, it was very primitive yet. Today you go to Borough Park, Chalav Yisrael, you have right there's Klein's ice cream. Ribbono Shel Olam, it's better than Baskin Robbins, it's better than Haagen-Dazs, it's better than Ben and Jerry's, Chalav Yisrael. It's a different world. It caught on, it influenced everyone. And the Tzelemus Hashgacha was totally accepted. There was no machloket. The Tzelemus Hashgacha, it's not just the Satmar came to America. Satmar came to America, and yes, we'll see in a minute, the Lubavitcher, the sixth Rebbe, and who's Hashgacha? The Lubavitcher told him right away, the Tzelem HaHashgacha. We'll go uptown, Washington Heights, Breuer's community, and remember, they became a force. They accepted Tzelem. They accepted Tzelem. With Breuer's community, I'll tell you a good story, Charlie. B'didi HaViyuvda. Well, whatever, if you read my memoir about what happened in basic training, on basic training, you know, I just was my normal self, and it became for the Army like an historic event. A trainee spoke and saved the situation. So the chief rabbi sends for me, and we became very close, Rabbi Gatnavon. And over the years, I get a phone call, it's years later, I get a phone call from General Navon, and he has a real problem. They found out that there's the parava milk, and they want to introduce it in the army. It would be fabulous. The Chilonim can now have coffee with a parava milk, and they won't be carrying on. It's who can live with these kosher laws? There's only one problem. It's Kehilat Adat Yeshurin Heksha. And he goes through all the lists of the Agudas HaRabbanim and the Histadrut HaRabbanim, and he doesn't see Breuer. And he wanted to know whether Breuer is reliable. Yeah, you know, he never. So I told him, some people, you don't have to give them a Heksha. Everyone knows they're reliable. There was a famous bakery in Jerusalem like that. If you asked them for Tudah, they looked at you. They were insulted. And everyone bought from them. It was a Rehov Mordechai Ben Hillel. It's 50 plus years ago. And I told them, Kilat Adat Yeshurin, Halavai, the Agris Rabbanim, the Tatut Rabbanim should live up to their standards. But even Rabbi Breuer, Rabbi Shimon Schwab, they accepted the Rabbi Grunwald, and this revolution, which begins 1939, 1940, today it's part and parcel of the American scene. That the OU, what's the OU? Modernity, YU, modern people, NCSY, glatt kosher. Glatt kosher, and many times Chalav Yisrael, people, all right, it's interesting, the Chalav Yisrael didn't catch on to the extent that the Glatt kosher caught on, but you got to, there are reasons why, Reb Moshe's Tshuvot, and also common sense that in America, if someone is going to use camel's milk or pig's milk, I mean, you got to be crazy, because if the government catches you, you're finished. So, and you know, most people normally, it's like horse meat. Who uses horse meat today? There was in Tel Aviv a scandal a few years ago. Treif restaurants, they found them using horse meat. So one of the owners, they were using it to add, it adds a certain taste, mishigayim. So one of the owners says, why is the government so upset with me? I never said I was kosher, your father. But this caught on. Okay. So now, you see, you have the Lubavitcher Sapmaruv coming to America. And remember, when he comes to America, he doesn't know whether he's going to stay or not. I told you, he came sensibly to raise funds for his Hasidim and what existed in Palestine at the time. And when he came, he had no place to stay. And there was a Satmar Chassid from the old country, Reb Fayish, a very successful businessman. Last name was Moskowitz. I'm quoting here from, let me tell you what book I'm quoting from. It's a very interesting individual, and our lives have interacted. His name is Rabbi Chaim Dalfin, D-A-L-F-I-N. Rabbi Chaim Dalfin is a quintessential Chabadnik. A long beard and filled with Abad Yisrael, born and raised and bred in Chabad, lives in Chabad, was a shaluach, and now he got involved. He supports himself, lectures and endless volumes he puts out, and does some good research on various forms of Chabad. The volume that I interacted with him on was the volume on the Rav and the Rebbe. It's a volume that you can enjoy. His facts are correct. He really did his research, and I give him all the credit in the world. He had other volumes. I gave him a scum, I think, on three different volumes out of the many he published, as on Rav Huttner and the Rebbe, etc. This is a volume, Satmar and Lubavitch, by Rabbi Chaim Dalfin. It came out in 2017. And he tries, you see, his scholarly honesty is at times compromised by his desire to show Ahavat Yisrael. It shows in the volume because, let's face it, Chabad and Satmar, as you will see, had many bitter moments. I mean, Ribbono Shel Olam, Abe, if someone cuts off your beard, would you say that's a nice act or a terrible act, a ferocious act? Imagine cutting off someone's beard. Ben, your beard disappeared. They're mad at you. You have no right to have a beard. You're not from, etc., etc. So he tones it down as best as he can. But essentially, he is reliable. So I'm quoting from his book on Satmar Lubavitch, beginning on page 16. Now, we spoke about this. He describes the Satmar Rebbe's arrival, came on second day Rosh Hashanah, the boat docked. After Rosh Hashanah was over, a crowd came to welcome him, including the Tzelem Rav, was among those that came. Now, Reb Fibish Moskowitz was a successful businessman, had a big home in Crown Heights, and he needed a place to live, and he spent many weeks in Crown Heights at the home of Fayez Moskowitz. Now, what does this tell you? He was a few blocks away from Chabad. Now, the Satmar comes, it's not like today. Who knew him? Unknown. Perhaps unwanted, the Satmaruv comes, they have to make a minyan in his house. Where do you get a minyan? This is America, 1946. Vic Lubavitch, they send Talmidim to help the Satmaruv. You follow? So this is the way Satmar begins in America. They send Talmidim, the nearby Lubavitch Yeshiva sends students to help complete the minyan. Finally, the Satmar Rav is there, and he understands that the sixth Lubavitch Rebbe, who arrived in 1941, is conquering America. slowly but surely. What can you learn from him? Makes an appointment to go to see the sixth Lubavitcher. Now again, I repeat what I've said many times. In the 1800s, into World War I, basically, Lubavitch, Satmar, Bells were totally united that anyone who is a Zionist, a religious Zionist, is a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, debaucher, repetitious individual, an Eichwaff, a Trumpenik. 100%, a Pushtak. They were totally united. And here he goes to see the Satmarov, and each one came with Gaboyim. And I just want to quote it exactly. And Label Groner testifies that he heard that Label was young, the great Label Groner, one of my best friends. I miss him. Zecher Tzadik Levrachi died in the first wave of Corona. He was the Rebbe's right hand. He's a cousin to the Rebbe. The Groners are cousins. And he was the Rebbe's right hand. And Label Groner heard it from one of the people who were there at this meeting between Lubavitch and Satmar. And they started discussing the Holocaust. And the Satmarov is going strong, l'shitato, the Zionist. They brought it about, the Jews in Germany, the reform, the assimilation, they brought it about. This is God's punishment. And I'm quoting, this is what the Lubavitcher Rebbe said to him. Machnish gerechte Eibishte. Er hat uns nicht gekommt als a patch. Don't justify God. We didn't deserve such a slap in our face, 6 million dead. So you see, the Satmar was getting a little bit of an education here that Lubavitch was shifting gears. And this already is the sixth Rebbe, I'm not talking already the seventh Rebbe, where World War III is declared between Lubavitch and Satmar. And just jumping ahead for your edification, for your knowledge, this will explain to you why in the 70s Satmar declared World War IV against Bells. Could you imagine what it meant for Satmar that here's Bells, who were fellow bed travelers, who agreed with everything anti, and Bells joins Agudat Yisrael? Wow. Agudat Yisrael, worse than Mizrahi. Worse than Mizrahi. Mizrahi, Rakhafetz and Mizrahi. I said, no, Shvaf, look at him. That guy is it's a rabbi. That's a Talmud Chacham. That's a Yerei Shemayim. Ah, no, Shvaf. A Mizrachist, but an Agudist with a long beard and black clothes and Bells, they're worse. Because they can pose to say, we're the real Haredim, not Satmar. You don't know what went on here, okay. You don't know what went on in America. Ultimately, a truce was declared today. No one is fighting. Everyone is just looking to make money and advance in the world. But all right, the Baruch Hashem, Ashrei Mishezachinu. The only place that there's real idealism left is in Israel. Here you come up with real idealism. And all right, we got to do our share to keep it constructive. To keep it constructive. Anyway, come back here. I don't know what, I recorded a 45-minute talk why I support Smotrich and Ben-Gvir. I wish that talk would be made available. Chaval that Yomo didn't come with me and record it. But you'll understand in that talk, I speak about Meir, you know, I gave endless, it's on a level like the Rav would speak it, you know, I gave endless sources, Shas and Paiskin, etc. But with Meir Kahana, I said, I'll tell you what hurts me about Israel. Everyone paints him as the Vi Avot HaTumah. I said, when it comes to Meir Kahana, I go with a rabbinic principle, Palginin Dibura, Gemurin Kitten. divided. Some I accept, some I don't. But give him credit. There are 1 million Russian Jews in Israel. Who put that issue on the map? I lived it. Who heard about Jews in Russia? Charlie, do you remember or not? You're not that much younger than I am, right? You're younger, but 10 years, what is between us? I don't know. But do you remember Mayer went out and throwing tomatoes at the consul in New York at the cars? He woke us up. All right? Give him credit. Don't. He's not cool. Come, Mayer. And by the way, I said Baruch Goldstein, Mayer in a billion years would have never let Baruch Goldstein do what he did. In a billion years. Please understand. Anyway, come back here. So you see, it's a very interesting conversation between Lubavitch and Satmar. Now, there's definitely an influence from Lubavitch upon Satmar. Dolphin makes this point, and I'm inclined to agree with him. It's not something you can prove black and white, but try to put yourself in the Satmar Rav's place. You're coming to America. You don't know what to do. You were in Palestine. You have a following there. When all is said and done, Yerushalayim is Yerushalayim. It's not Brooklyn. Maybe we should go back, raise money, go back in style. You have money, you're the king, you can control, you can build, you can dictate, you can give orders. And he sees the Lubavitcher is doing in America. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, time and again, quoted what his father-in-law said when he arrived in America. And that's the famous story that there are 100 ear witnesses and endless memory literature, what's the word? Memoir literature. And I heard it from my wife's own cousins, wonderful people, everyone. What was the story? And I repeat it, I said it years ago, but I repeat it now in context. When the sixth Rebbe arrived in America, he was crippled already, multiple sclerosis. He was in a wheelchair, and the Hasidim brought him to a hotel on the Upper West Side. And they said to him, Bizah Lashon, Rebbe, you've suffered enough under the communists, under the Nazis. We want the Rebbe to relax, retire. And they told him that in Lakewood, I gave you all the information years ago, in Lakewood there was a hotel owned by people who had Lubavitch feel and came from, you know, they were clean shaven, but they came from Lubavitch stock. You go to this hotel, Klap Kosher, and once a month we'll Fabrein, Rosh Chodesh, we'll all come out to Lakewood. And the sixth Rebbe told the seventh Rebbe, again, I got to watch myself not to say the current Rebbe. You understand, not a messianics, but somehow you think you know the seventh Rebbe. The sixth Rebbe told the seventh Rebbe, du kannst verstehen, was war schlafa bechachat den Nacht, how I slept that night. And he wakes up in the morning and he calls in the chassidim and says, where I come from, chassidim asked the Rebbe for advice. The Rebbe does not ask Hasidim for advice. And he says, I'm going to rest 2 weeks and we're starting all over. And ich werde weisen, als Amerika ist nicht anders wie die alte Heim. I'm going to start all over and show that America is not different than the old home. And the Satmar saw that the Lubavitch is succeeding. And it's reported that the Lubavitch Rebbe gave advice to other Rebbeim too. We're changing America. It can be changed. It can be done. And remember, Lubavitch was small yet, but they already were influencing hundreds. This goes without saying. And I'll come back to it. You'll see. Now, something else happened, and we referred to this earlier, but now I want to put it into the context. The Simchas Torah comes. It's the Rebbe's first Simchas Torah in America. And 1946, and the Rebbe's in Williamsburg, they want to do hakafot, a crowd is coming, and they There was a Beis Yaakov building, the captain of him, these are Litvashir people, this is from Brisk, and they make their school available, big shul, big Beit Medrash, and hundreds came to see the Sakhmarov. And he dances for hours, all right? Yaakov, I'm a Litvak. I don't know how much I'd be impressed with someone dancing for hours. But if you have a Hasidic soul, Yomo stamped from Colin Stulliner. So he was there in 46. He saw the Satmar dancing with this little Sefer Torah. And you see, you start to understand that you can build in America. And people are supporting the Satmar. You see, the attitude was, what's wrong? He's from, he's anti-Zionist, all right, he's anti-Zionist. With time it'll wear down, or wear up, whichever expression you want to use from the clothing industry. But, he's Shomer Shabbos. And I can tell you the story. I mean, this story is classic. Unfortunately, the family today has been disgraced, but that's a different story. It's many movies could be made out of what goes on in Israel. Anyway, the Eda Haredit, he was called the foreign minister, Rabbi Scheinberger. It's the grandfather of Yehuda Meshi. May he rest in peace. I don't know what to say. I once met Yehuda Meshi's parents, Scheinberg. They died in Corona, both his parents. Then he committed suicide, and God have mercy. And he was a hero. Rakefet boasted, look what happens in Israel. But anyway, so Rabbi Scheinberg was the foreign minister. So he's collecting money, and he was a terrific, and I never met him, but they tell me this is a man that spoke Yiddish and English and Hebrew. You met him? Say he was an operator par excellence, like the Panovich Rav. He knew where to go, what to do. So I heard this from Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, who was sitting there, Mr. Feuerstein and Reb Aaron, and they were in his brother's home. This must be in the 50s, this, 60s. And Saturday night, there's a knock on the door, and it's Rabbi Scheinberger collecting. And the Rav writes a check. By the way, this check is on internet. Someone had the check, and you can. I was once shown, I couldn't believe it. I think it was $100. $100 is like writing a check today for $3,000. And the Rav gives him stucker. When he walks out, they jump on the Rav. Rebbe, do you know who you gave that money to? And the Rav says, what's that sign? Rebbe, if you go, he'll demonstrate against you. They'll put up paskvilas against you. And the Rav says, Zagmir, tell me, as Hashem Shabbos? Yes. As Hashem Kashrut? Yes. No, he gave me his word, he won't use my money to pay for the demonstrations against me. But you see, that attitude. Now, why am I telling you all this? Because how do you get started? Once the Satmar Rav made up his mind to stay in America, you got to begin. Kashrut you have. Kashrut is the most basic need. You can't live where there's no kosher food available. All right? The basic need. Then it's chinuch. David, you have to educate your children. The Satmar begins Torah V'yira. How do you get accreditation? How do you get the children? They'll have degrees. They can get a degree. They can be recognized. So, two institutions stepped in to help him. Ultimately, three. Teir Vadas, Chaim Berlin, and Mir. And when Satmar first began, they were registered as branches of institutions that were acknowledged. I see, again, cooperation. More than that. And this you'll see from, there's nothing that compares to memoir literature, because you're not making it up. You're telling the story. This is when I wrote Washington, you can't say I'm wrong. This is what Rakefet felt. This is what Ani Rothkopf felt. You understand? You don't agree with my feelings. All right, you can agree, disagree. But you can't argue with me. This is the impression that was left upon me by Rav Aaron Cutler, by the Rav, by Rav Moshe, etc. So what was happening was they were made, look, you go to YU. I went to YU. Not every kid. There was a kid in the Bronx. We were a handful of religious kids in the Bronx. There was a kid, Solomon, Yossi Solomon. I hope he's still alive. He's a year older than I am. He went to the MTA, davened by Rabbi Brick. He wasn't happy. The environment wasn't spiritual enough. The Talmud Moshe Wiener, who's upset with his Rebbe, yours truly, that I don't have a beard, he came to YU. He wasn't happy. It wasn't spiritual enough. All right, I don't know what that means. I went to YU. To me, it was wonderfully spiritual. Other kids went, it was too spiritual. But that's an individual reaction. Already in America from 1929 on, you had the Malachim. And see, this is a fascinating case study. My wife's family, my neighbor is Professor Kami Horowitz, Rabbi Dr. Professor Kami Horowitz. He's related to some of the hyped Malachim. And these Malachim, they were called Malachim. They broke with Chabad. And it was on the street I was born and raised. It was five blocks away from where my father grew up, Washington Avenue on 169th. My father grew up on Washington 174th. I grew up Washington 181st. And Rabbi Levine, the sixth rabbi, had secular books. So nice stuff, a shake it. And these malachim, that's what I told you, had a lot of problems in Teira Vadas. You know that. This is a fact. There's a whole tshuva written. Mr. Mendelovich threw them out. And Normie Lamb's uncle wrote a whole tshuva, Rabbi Bandu, justifying Mr. Mendelovich. Gemara with Rabbi Zaira, you can throw him out. And these people, the Satmar Ruv is there. He had an audience of them. There are no malachim left today. If you were a malach, you either went to Satmar, oh, you brought many of the malachim are living in Israel today. Their descendants with kippat surugat, surugim as they're called, part and parcel of the great miracle of the rebirth of Yehuda v'Shomer and the state of Israel and all that goes with it. But Satma, you see, here he had an audience, the Webermans, the Sohns, you can go on and on, with names of malachim, so that when all is said and done, by 1947, the Satmar has made a conscious or subconscious division. America, Yvala Moshe, I'm remaining here. It's good. We can work. We can accomplish. Look at Lubavitch. And we have more to offer. And we're more honest, but if Lubavitch can succeed, we can succeed. Now, here's a beautiful case study that indicates what we're talking about. And here I call your attention again, Rabbi Dalfin, beginning on page 56. And here Rabbi Dalfin, I don't believe he has a college degree. By the way, he has a son in North Tel Aviv who has a legitimate Lubavitch shul. You know the shul, Yaakov? It's normal, because four blocks more north is a little shtibul where the Rebbe is davening and he's alive and he gets aliyah and all that goes with it. Lower Leinu. I have a wonderful Talmud from Lubavitch. He's been my Talmud many, many years. I think he picked me up more than anyone else when Rabbi Nordlich, when Milton Nordlich was selling my tapes, I didn't know, but my tapes, I was recording every shiur. Three shiur went to America, to my Talmidim there. And one Talmud, Rabbi Burke, these were great people, Rabbi Burke left, Sleicha Tzadik Levracha. So when he finished the tapes, he would give them to Nordlich, and Nordlich saw people interested in him. And I told you, I didn't care if he sold them. He didn't make money on it. I mean, it was just cost and all. Even if he made money, what do I care? People want to hear my Torah, that's my payment. But I said, you got to tell me you're selling the tapes. Do you know why, Abe? Because when you heard me in BMT, I maledicted, I cursed, I yelled, I shouted, I called off a Chinaman. When people are listening, you got to watch what you say. I don't want to be like Smutridge and call Netanya Shakran, Ben Shakran. Charlie, you couldn't make it up what goes on here. If you saw it in a novel, you say, impossible. Marjorie Morgan, Morgenstern, Marjorie Morningstar, Verstehst, that's what Vuk, Vuk, what was eight? What was his first name? Herman Wook, correct. So you couldn't make it up. So the beginning on page 56, he becomes he's like a sociologist here. It's like Dr. Kranzler's PhD thesis, Williamsburg. He has case studies, sociological case studies, exactly what you have here. He said, I want to tell you the story. I interviewed Reb Nissim Menachem Mendel Greenberg of Kiryat Yoel, a real satma, born in Chicago in 1935. And his parents came to America running away from Europe, and they came from Lubavitch stock. This is Chicago, where Mark Wiener lives. This is Chicago. And the previous Rebbe, when he came to America, he visited Chicago in 1942. He visited Chicago in 1929, too. But his parents weren't there yet. 42, they went to see the Rebbe, the kid. He went. We all he remembers is kissing the Rebbe's hand. But I don't recall what he said, but we did daven in Rabbi Hech's shul. He was the previous Rebbe's emissary to Chicago. All right. And he says, my family came from Kutzkes Hasidim. I'm named Menachem Mendel, named after the Kutzke Rebbe, and they became Lubavitchers. Now, after World War II, if you're born in 1935, then by 1945 you're 10 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old. You have to search, to seek. I can say that since the age of 11 or 12 at the most, I have no other value outside of Torah. At 11 already, you're a big kid. I see my grandchildren already at the 7, 8, they, wow, big kids already. They think, they learn, they have opinions, they're the future. So if you recall when I spoke about what's going on in YU, I told you that three people, institutions brought YU under Lakewood, Touro, and Satma. No, Vic, remember that? Lakewood, what was the name of the judge? Cutler. Where did she get her legal degree? Touro. Who's the lady leading the charge for recognitions of the deviant behavior? A lady named Mizells. Who is Mizells? She's a Satma. It's the Satma family. She's an oracle of the Atzei Chaim. Oh, wow, what Satma, title-bound Yichus. Tell me, who came to Chicago after World War II? Mizells, Abtzvi Hirsch Mizells. He becomes a mechutin to the Satma Rav, to the successor of Rabiol. Rabiol had no grandchildren who survived. No, there were children. I don't think they're no grandchildren. But children didn't survive. But his successor married, the two families married. Mizells was from the Sheder Kapleta, Ungarische, a Satma, no compromise with America. And this kid from Lubavitch Chatzka family became very close. I discovered the Vitznitzer Rov, Reb Tzvi Ishmaizel's Mekadshei Hashem. I quoted that when I dealt with the Holocaust many years ago. I gave 5 years on response literature from the Holocaust. I dealt with his forum, and he becomes very close to the kid. And see, here's a kid. He's seeking. He's searching. He's not going to be satisfied with YU. He's not going to be satisfied with Lakewood. Forgive me, Ben. He's certainly not going to be satisfied with Ne Yisrael. Abe, you follow me? He's searching. So the Vitznitzer Rav tells him the Sapper Rav is coming to Chicago. It's 1948. I'm going to introduce you to him. And he's introduced to the Sapper Rav, and the Sapper Rav is impressed, an American kid seeking, searching, and he tells the Sapper Rav that he wants to go to his yeshiva, Torah V'Yira, in Williamsburg. And the Sapper Rav looks at this American kid and says, "Ah, it's not a good idea for you. My yeshiva is like a Hungarian yeshiva. Altsus in Yiddish, that's the language. The students are all survivors. They live in great poverty, sleeping on hard wooden benches and subsisting on vegetables and stale bread. And for a kid from Chicago, this is not a solution." And he shows you Sapper Rav Hatzeichel. But he tells the kid, "You know what? Go to Lubavitch. Do you want something warm? Do you want something Hasidish?" You see, there wasn't, this is the 40s, there wasn't the 50s, there wasn't this terrible split yet. And the kid goes to Lubavitch. And he says, "I was the only real non-Lubavitcher there. All the other kids were real Lubavitcher." And there was the dormitory. Then there were other kids who lived in Williamsburg, Crown Heights, who came by bus, slept at home at night. And Rabbi Mentlik was our dormitory supervisor. Rabbi Mentlik was a legendary machanech, a legendary Rebbe in 770 in the yeshiva. And he was so close, so warm, so wonderful. But nevertheless, the kid seeking out Satmi had met the Satma in Chicago. Friday night, I walked about 20 minutes from the dormitory, which was at the tail end of Crown Heights, closer to Williamsburg, and I walked to 550 Bedford Avenue, the Beit Medrash of the Satma Rebbe. I felt close to the Rebbe via my connection, the Vitznitzer Rav. The Rebbe's tish lasted until 3 a.m. And then I walked back to the dormitory. In those days, it was safe to walk the streets. Today, if you notice, they write, "In those days, it was safe to take the subway." Oh boy, who can believe what happened to New York City? We'll see tomorrow in the elections how it plays out. Now, but notice, you see, this kid, if he had Ani Rothkopf or Aaron Rakefet as a Rebbe, I would encourage him. This kid is seeking something different than my lifestyle. You understand me, Ben? To me, to go to a tish and be up to 3 in the morning, that's not me. You know what my fry shop Friday night is like? 9 o'clock, 9:30, I'm asleep. Not 4 o'clock. Gotta sleep a little longer. There's an open Mordechai. By 4:45, I'm got a Gemara open. I am doing 2 blocks before I go to shul. That's me, Shabbos. But I can't put someone else into a Rothkopf Rakefet straitjacket. You understand? But this kid, and he talks about how Rabbi David Raskin was one of the Mechanchim in Lubavitch, also a very famous name, and he loved him and they remained close for life, but nevertheless he began walking every Friday night to the Satmar Rebbe's Tish. The Satmar Rebbe noticed him. Remember, Satmar Rebbe is a relatively young man yet. He sees a kid who's interested. It's like Gabe walked into my class, David walked into my class. A year ago you walked in. Remember, I'm the happiest person alive to renew your acquaintance. Someone wants to learn with me. Adarabba v'adarabba. And the Satmar Rebbe started talking with him. And he told the Rebbe, I'm quoting, I'm not making this up. This is a live description. I told the Rebbe there were boys in the dormitory who were eating regular milk products, not Chalav Yisrael. You follow? I told him about boys who would buy secular magazines. You know, I mean secular magazines, Time Magazine, Newsweek. In those days, there was no computer. Who reads magazines? I read The Economist. That I do look at. I get it from a Talmida, passes it on to my daughter, who passes it on to my wife. Then it comes to me, God, it's very fascinating, because when I saw The Economist had an article months ago that within 30 years the Haredim will be the majority of the Jews in Israel, and they're shaking already in The Economist. Oh boy, they were predicting the election. They didn't even realize it. Baruch Hashem. And the boys, I was upset by the behavior. Well, the Satmar Rav told me I should discuss my concerns with Rabbi Mendlich. Rabbi Mendlich, this was, you got to remember, when you saw pictures of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the 6th Rebbe, the 7th Rebbe, from the 40s to 50s, Rabbi Mendlich would be right behind the Rebbe. This was a famous Lubavitcher Hasid. And he went to Rabbi Mendlich. And listen to the answer. Rabbi Mendlich's response was that a Lubavitch yeshiva is akin to a hospital. They need to heal the sick. Quote. All right? They need to heal the sick. These kids, they see this. You know what? This reminds me of Charlie. You remember my lectures on Rabbi Levy in South America? Tzion Levy. He was a classmate of Rav Ovadia Yosef. And he built an empire in South America. He raised Shas, and all that you have here is a good deal of it is from the money he could raise with the billionaires. So one time a Rav is visiting him, and he can't believe what he sees. This big shul, and Shabbos morning, endless cars parked outside around the shul. So he says to Rabbi Lee, what kind of Torah is this driving? He says, why? What do you see? He says, I see your shoe. That's not a shoe. That's a hospital. These people are sick. What you're seeing outside are the ambulances that brought them to the hospital. It's exactly what Rabbi Mendlich answered. These are sick people. We have to cure them. All right? Now he goes back to the Satmar Rebbe at the next Fabrein, and he tells the Satmar Rebbe what Rabbi Mendlich said. And Rabbi Mendlich didn't like it, and Rabbi the Satmar Rebbe didn't like it. He responded that this is contrary to Jewish law. A ritually pure person who touches the impure person becomes impure. Yet the opposite is not true. You follow what's happening here. Paraduma. If I'm Tahar and I touch something Tameh, I become Tameh. But if the Tameh touches the Tahar, it doesn't make him Tahar yet. You follow? It's a little different than Paraduma. Because Paraduma, it's the Tahar becomes Tameh, but the Tameh, ultimately you sprinkle, makes Tahar. And makes the person taha. But he now went back to Rabbi Mendlich and told him what the Satmar Rebbe said. He responded that the Rebbe was correct, yet what can we do? We must be there for all our students. I mean, I love this. This is, you see, Satmar and Lubavitch coming to life before you. No, Ben, what does it remind you of? 1954 in Lakewood, there was a Brit. And one of the old Kletzke Talmidim, Reb Dover Gulevsky, this was Reb Simcha Rieger's nephew. You gotta know who you're talking about. Reb Simcha Zelig Rieger went, ugh. And he was Reb Aaron's Talmid in Kletzk. And he came to Lakewood for the Brit. They were related, the family. Unfortunately, no one's alive from what I'm telling you. I could tell you names, but it's not important. And how did Gulevsky make a living, Vic? Later, he gave hashgacha to all the vegetarian, all the vegan places. That caused already a lot of problems. That they're owned by Jews, open Shabbos, did a shtamachira. But he taught in YU. Friday night they were mechabed Rav Gulevsky to speak Talmud, big Talmud Chacham, Talmud Mufak of Baron from Kletz. And it was the Pasha of Paraduma, and he spoke about the Paraduma, how it's unique, that at times we have to be metahed the Tmeim, even though the Tmeim a little tumor, even the Tahorim, a little tumor rubs off on them. Well, they were furious in Lakewood. Oh, God, what went on that Shabbos? What a noisvav, teaching in YU, and he tells us he's being metachia, the Temeim, the YU icevavs, and all right, a little bit rubs off on him. That's his, do you know that Saturday night, this is a true story, Saturday night they were comforting to go up to the room he's sleeping in and cut off his beard. And the only thing that stopped them was that Reb Aaron was sleeping in the room next door. That was Reb Aaron's room. And they were worried they'd wake up the Rosh Yeshiva. You know, you cut off someone's beard, he'll wake up, he'll start screaming, yelling, he'll wake up. That's what saved Rav Galevsky's beard. So you see, this is exactly Rabbi Mentlich, the Satmar Rebbe, Paraduma. We're involved. This is life. How do you handle it? How do you do it? All right, I told you. I've picked up tumor. I was asked, I remember in the Kollel, I had students from the Kollel today. This is like way beyond their interests. I have different type of students, Baruch Hashem, but I was asked. Remember, I told you this kid is involved in NCSY, the outreach, Kabbalat Shabbat with the guitar, Lechod Ali Mizr. Oh, we've reached Mr. Shilom Shabbat. Isha Malacha begins. Put the guitar down. Rabbi, what do you think? You're crazy. What kind of Kabbalat Shabbat is that? When I saw it in action and I saw what's going on, I said, it's genius. Do it. It teaches the kids. Ben Kodesh L'chol. Ad Kan Chol. This is Shabbat. No guitar. You follow me, Abe? No, I became a little tamei. What can I do? But how many young men and women made to her through that Kabbalat Shabbat. What I saw in Bnei Akiva and Ezra, my time, Bnei Akiva. First of all, I told you, no divorce. One couple, he became an apikoyrish. She had to throw him out. Outside of that, the children we raised, the grandchildren, the contribution to Israel. Sitting in Oel Aaron between Mincha Marav, we come in from Mincha to shoot. They're making a movie there. You should see a professional movie, the crew, the equipment, the blocked off the police. Making a movie, I couldn't believe it. Very similar to what I saw in Marjorie Morningstar, an Orthodox shul, Yom Kippur, with the kittel. And take care, David. They're making a movie in all Aaron. And then we'll be finished by Mincha. So after Mincha, I grabbed the head guy making the movie. Miatam, Mata. We start talking. I know his grandfather and his grandmother and Bnei Akiva. And this kid doesn't know where he's coming from. I had to tell him about his uncle and Rehovot and the Rav in Boston. Oh my gosh, he wanted to make a movie of me talking about his family. But you see, the integration. So all right, Tahar Machloket. Ah, but then something happens already that the Sfat Muruv goes hysterical. Some time passed, and one day Rabbi Mentlich informs us that it was the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe's yahrzeit, the sixth Rebbe. It's 1953. And we're going to visit his gravesite, the Ohel. It was the 10th of Shvat, 1953, and I felt very uncomfortable with this announcement because I am a Kohen and I'm not allowed to enter a cemetery. Oh, Rabbi Mentlich assured me that the Lubavitcher Rebbe rules like those Hasidic authorities that permit a Kohen to visit a tzaddik's grave. Now what are we talking about? Rabbeinu Peter, you never know, he comes up in my writings in the Silva era when they jumped on Rabbi Schoenfeld, Fabian, was für Namen für ein jüdischer Mensch. And Rav Leisa Silva jumps up, if Rabbeinu Peter, you can't sign the Talmud Bufrak from Rabbeinu Tam, Fabian can sign Fabian, Peter. And Rabbeinu Peter said, I'm a Kohen, but I would metame myself. A tzaddik does not create tumah. Wow. Then, the next time he saw the Satmar Rebbe, this kid tells the Satmar Rebbe what happened, and that we met with, and the Kohen, and the cemetery. Whoa, the Satmar Rebbe was quite upset. This is against halacha. Once again, I shared the Satmar Rebbe's positions with Rabbi Mentlich. Rabbi Mentlich evidently went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. To my surprise, at the very next Shabbos Fabrenian, the Lubavitcher Rebbe brought up this issue. He quoted the Midrash, how the Navi Yirmiyahu HaKohen is instructed by God to travel to Hebron to pray at the graves of the patriarchs and the matriarchs. The Lubavitcher Rebbe speaking. See, I'm positive, I told you, when we went to Lubavitch, that Yutet Kislev, right before Hanukkah, I don't know what year it was, 54, 53, and someone evidently told the Rebbe that there are a group of YU students who came. Because I'll never forget the Torah we heard from, you know, Ben Gavri LeGavri, he spoke, they sang, L'chaya. We got it, yeah, go online, go to the beautiful computer and type in Lubavitcher Rebbe's Fabrengens Yaakov, you'll have enough material for 7 years on the computer. So the Rebbe spoke about, thank God, the Maccabim have nishkiven litvakim. Thank God the Maccabim won't litvakim. Remember my vod? Because they would have made a cheshbon with the candles, who has the light, the onus rachmana padre, and he knew we were YU guys and litvakim. So here too, the Rebbe answered his question. The following Friday night he attends the Satmar Rebbe's tish, and he repeats what the Lubavitcher Rebbe said at the Fabrengen. The Lubavitcher Rebbe said, number one, you can't bring a proof from the Vah Hashem. This was a unique circumstance. It's like Eliyahu HaNavi, where the Makriv Kabbana, the outside of the Beit HaMikdash, outside of the Mishkan. This is Chad Pami, it's the Vah Hashem, number one. Number two, who says Yirmiyahu stood next to the graves? Was Matama himself? Maybe he stood nearby and prayed there. And you should know in Israel, I can tell you at the Beit Shemesh Cemetery that was built especially for Anglos, the Kohanim are always buried right near the road. And you can actually stand on the road away from the graves, at least Al Ramot, and you can see the graves of your family. You have to go anywhere near there. And there are no trees. They're very careful. It's not like Borough Park that they just chop down the trees. It's big news. You're able to walk on the street next to the cemetery. The religious Jews who are in the state assembly had the trees chopped down so religious Jews can walk there. Are you aware of that, Vic? That's a new development in Borough Park, right next to Flatbush. All right, you can understand after this conversation and after this long give and take between the two, the Satmar Rav already understood this kid's soul belongs in Satmar. And he transferred the Satmar, and the rest of his life should live and be well. Reb Mendel raised a beautiful, God-fearing family, all loyal Satmar Hasidim. He is known in his community, quote, as Mendel Chicagoer, end quote. That's where he comes from, that's his identity. And by the way, that was across the board in Europe. The Litvish Yeshiva, everyone was known where he came from. If I studied in Mir and I amounted to something, I would have been known as Aaron Brantza. That's the way each one was known. It's amazing. The Baron Cutler, the city was Slitsevitz. It's just amazing. That's the way they... It's not your last name. It was your city of origin. Every last one. And here you see, with Satmar, exactly Chicago. All right, so that's a case study. It's a beautiful case study. You know, he's at home in Satmar. Let him be at home. I hope his children can be a little bit more open, as many Satmar are, go to the Kotel and recognize that we have a mitzvah of Yishev Eretz Yisrael here. And I've seen many examples. Unfortunately, when they leave the total Satmar position, some throw it all away. And that's the baby in the bathwater. And their two Satmar descendants who are in Tzva Hagana Yisrael today, one no longer religious, the other one with the kippah. And I understand, I was told that he went to the Pashkana Rebbe. The Pashkana Rebbe is in Gilo, is Rabbi Yisrael Friedman, is Arujana, and the son of Rabbi Yisrael Friedman, and the Pashkana Rebbe, he is, as you know, a Tataluf in Tzva Hagana Yisrael. He reached the rank of Brigadier General. And he spoke with the Satmar that gave him Torah sense. You don't have to throw away Torah just because you throw away the anti-Zionism. And he had a big impact. And that Satmar one remains from. The other one, I sense wasn't from, because there was a whole release that Lubavitch was doing a tefillin campaign in the army, and they put tefillin on him. And I said right away, what do you mean put tefillin on? You daven every morning. Well, what's going on here? When Lubavitch bothers me to put on tefillin, I drive him crazy. I say, I haven't missed a day in my life to tefillin. Now you figure that out. I said, shiver for my father, said shiver for my mother. And they can't figure it out. They're not Lamdanim. I mean, then I have to tell them, my father died Chol HaMoed, and my mother died at 7 o'clock, and I daven 5:30. My brother here lived davens at 6. So he already put tefillin on that day. That day was the burial. The next day is tefillin. And, but that day, we're putter from tefillin. It's Yom HaMita and Yom HaKvura. But we put on before. But my brother in America, the minute we called him, we sent him tomorrow morning, you don't put on tefillin. That's all. It was a 10-hour difference. He's in Las Vegas and we're calling from here. So, you see, when Satmar came to America, it wasn't that they came ready to fight and ready to demand and ready to put everyone else down. They came to America greenhorns, like everyone else came to America. But the Satmar Rav very quickly, you see, Lubavitch, but he saw Lubavitch. No doubt in my mind that the success of Lubavitch, the success of Tselem, later the success of Bavav, I mean, you got to understand, they began with next to nothing. Look what Bavav is today. Look what Satmar is today. All right, Tselem remained small. It never caught on to be as big as the others. But still, Glock Kosher and Chalav Yisrael, you have to give credit. But there's no question that this helped the Satmar Rav decide, Ivala Moshe Flo, I can remain in America, I can accomplish, I can do. And you have the 50s, he needs help, he needs Mir, he needs Chaim Berlin, he needs Torah Vadash, he needs the Malachim. By the time you reach the 60s, the Satmar Rav basically doesn't need anyone. He has succeeded. He's caught up in America, and he knows America, and you see that in the elections tomorrow, what went on getting this Satmar Rav to agree to this one, the other Satmar Rav, the other one, I think it was automatic. Once one went for Zeldin, the other one for Heuchel, but we'll see the results tomorrow. But he's in America now. Now, Be'ezrat Hashem, this is very important material because it gives you an understanding. You don't just hit it superficially. We'll see how the Machlokes begins. And there's no two ways about it, that the Six-Day War and the Entebbe rescue greatly intensified the Satmar Lubavitch Machlokes. And this is the sad part, that Satmar introduced, you know, there's one type of Machlokes, intellectual. You can debate, you can dialogue, but you don't get into fist fights. Satmar got into fist fights. And that's sad. And that brings us into the 70s, the 80s, and time marches on. Live and Let Live becomes part of Satmar too. And I can tell you, I standing on a corner in Borough Park, I meet the Satmar Chassid. And I see an intelligent person. And I ask him, where were you born? He speaks English with an accent. Born in Brooklyn, my eyes opened. I understood already what's going on with the core curriculum today. But we had a wonderful discussion. And he said, I'm a follower of Rabbi Yoel. You're a follower of Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. He said it because. And when I could still travel, so it's a devotee of mine owns a hotel in Florida. I can go there chinam en kesef anytime I want. It's above Miami Beach. It's below Hollywood, Florida, if that helps you. Nice area. Sunnyside, I think it's called, but I may be wrong. Check it out. It's been a few years since I was there. And in the hotel, I meet a Lubavitcher, and he reminded me of myself as a kid. He was teaching in the Satmar High School in Queens. And I began teaching in YU in 62, and in reality, although I was a member of the, then it was REITs, but it was high school kids. And he reminded me of myself, and I get to talk with him. And outside of Eretz Yisrael, we were total agreement. It troubled me how here's a kid sitting and doesn't know the first thing about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and what it's all about. But on the other hand, there are plenty of Jews in Lakewood and Toronto who don't know about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So I can't get upset, but I couldn't live. Total Americanized. Makes a living, can take vacation. And this hotel that I was in, Sunny Isles, I think it's called, Sunny Isles. I'll tell you, the hotel, it was very attractive for Lubavitcher, because the downstairs of the hotel, Lubavitch bought it out and built $1 million renovation. What used to be a nightclub became an unbelievable Lubavitch high-class shul. Where did they get the money? Charlie, you know anything about the Adventura built up by Yordim from Israel, Sfadim, builders, construction? They became millionaires. And they love Lubavitch. It's just amazing. And they gave this guy, you need $100,000, whatever you need, we'll raise it. You can. So that hotel attracts Lubavitcher. I was back again at that hotel when I did my friend a favor, Pesach. They had invited Shmuley Boteach to the other residence. And some of the people objected. No, I was in the I was supposed to be in that hotel. Had to go to a different hotel to do them a favor in Princeton, New York. Took over a whole massive hotel and whatnot. And they invited Shmuley Boteach. And these were high-class balabatim from New York coming. And they were a little upset that Shmuley Boteach, they had to cancel it. And they brought in a substitute. I substituted to Shmuley Boteach, Aaron Rakefen. And I had a real wonderful experience, because under the OU, and the Mashkiach was one of my earliest Talmidim in BMT, early 70s, Abba Benel 24. And he was the Mashkiach, and I got to see the kitchen and how it worked and the shayas that come up. I mean, shayas you never thought of. 2 days yontif. How do you, and the staff, you can't bring in your staff. You have to use unionized people from the resort, from the hotel. Well, they go home at 7 o'clock. They want to cook for the next day. No, how do you cook from one day yontif to another? So they have to send people into the kitchen to taste the food. Do you follow? All right, it's a knapper heta, but it's reality. It's a heta. They taste the food. I learned so much from that kitchen. But also, all their cake, Gemara and Shabbos, B'Yemot HaMashiach, Atid in Eretz Yisrael, to export cakes and clothes. Do you know where all the cake came from? From Berman's Bakery, and you don't know how much cake they use. It must have been $100,000 order from Berman's Bakery, the finest Pesach cake I could. It was a whole education. My dear students, first of all, the Rebbe wants to thank you from the bottom of his heart. I lost a good 60 years this morning. I am the youngest person in this class. Abe, when I teach Torah, I'm as young as my great-grandchildren, practically. And I hope I don't lose it all, because this afternoon I have a big simcha, an upsharing of a great-grandson, Keva Shmuel Hanavi. And let me tell you, as I've said many times, where I grew up, I never heard the word upsharing. Charlie, did you hear the word in Russian? No, you also didn't hear it. And this is one of many, many upsharings I have been privileged to participate in. So it's going to be a very wonderful day, Be'ezrat Hashem. I hope we did a little bit about Satma, brought it a little bit, feeling and understanding. See, it's very simple to just say the Satma Ruf came to America and he was extreme and he started conquering. Satma Ruf came to America a greenhorn, but he was the Satma Ruf. He learned very quickly, and he shared authority. This is something very important to understand. He had people working with him. His gabayim, they were gems. And they understood America. And they helped the Rebbe. And you got to remember the achievements. Palm City, Williamsburg, two dynasties today after endless machlokes. It's, you got to give credit. Okay, Sunday morning, there's Rav Hashem, we pick up where we left off. And again, to me, it's unbelievably fascinating. Rav Menashe Klein writes a tshuva to a lawyer what does it mean to be a Hasidic Rebbe's son? What do you have to observe? And you're going to see, fascinating. But all right, this is Reb Menashe Klein. I can't envision Reb Moshe writing such a tshuva. I can't envision even the Mincha Yitzchak writing such a tshuva. But this is Reb Menashe Klein. The worlds merge into one. I also want to mention a Mazel Tov. Natan is not here, but Natan Bauer, who honors me with his presence, is officially getting engaged this Thursday night. And he and his wife-to-be have exactly the same first names, Natan and Natanya. Okay? And Natanya, Natan Ka, beautiful name. I have like that. The grandchildren with Ka in their names. Kanayin Hara. And I have a daughter already, Ranya, Ranya. She changed from Rani to Ranya, Rani to Ranya, correct? And wow. So I want to extend the tremendous Mazel Tov to Natan and Natanya. All right, if the names are the same, it's a sign for a good Zivik. What did Rav Kefet always say? If they look alike, and you remember my student Klaus Mizrachon Levrach, he claimed it was a Maimer Chazal. I said, yes, it's no Maimer Chazal. It's a witticism from yours truly. He would quote it, my Rebbe said, a Maimer Chazal. If they look alike, it's a good sign. Are there any questions from the erudite audience in front of me? Where is Yomo? Who knows how to put this to open it to the world? No one knows how. Okay, are there any... No, you can't ask. You're muted.
What is a knappe heter? Can you translate that?
A knappe heter. A schwache heter. A weak heter. Chalash. Chalash. Chalash.
Unmute themselves. They can unmute themselves now.
You can unmute yourselves? Can they speak? Anyone have any questions from around the world? Anyone? Can Mark, say something to me.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so they can speak. There are no questions. All right, I want to thank you for honoring me with your presence on screen. And until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya.